ladies and gentlemen, for joining us on StashMyComics.com podcast, episode number 25, the huge milestone, issue number 25, where cool things can happen and will happen. I'm your host, Tim Morrison, as always, is Kelly. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm okay. I'm very excited about today's show. We got a lot of cool things planned. But before we get into that, Jason, editor at Stash My Comics, how are you today?
I'm sick.
I told it was going to be exciting.
Yes. Yes. Fun film. Maybe you should take some or something like that.
But if you know, you hear someone blowing their nose throughout the podcast, it's just me.
Next to Jason, we have the man behind the plan of Geek Cinema. Tom, how are you? Hopefully you're not sick today.
No, I'm feeling a little spry, might I say.
Well, that's good to hear. Good to hear.
Well, what body would die for you?
I'll be sick of cinema.
All right, so we are at episode 25. This is a big milestone for us. It's been just under a year since Stash My Comics had the podcast going. Matt, our producer, who couldn't be here today, it's really a shame that he couldn't be here today to be a part of this, but he was the first host of Stash My Comics for any of you that have been listening from the beginning up to this point, and he's been with the podcast and the entire series since the beginning, either as a host and writer for the show or where he's at now, which is R. Oz, the man behind the curtain, our producer, one of the writers for the show. Kelly, Tom, Jason, favorite moments so far up to the 25th episode?
Who's going first?
No one told me that I had a favorite moment.
Okay.
How about working with you fine people all the time?
Well, yeah, I
yeah.
Oh, I wasn't gonna go with that. Yeah, I wasn't gonna go with that at all. No.
I'd have to say indelible story experiences for me. That's one that immediately comes to mind because that's where the awesomeness that was Maximum Overdrive came from.
Making fun of Maximum Overdrive is a highlight for me.
How about just making fun of him in general?
Yeah, that'd be a highlight maybe for you guys.
Well, yeah, making fun of Maximum Overdrive would have been a highlight for me if only it didn't lead to me having to watch Maximum Overdrive and it went downhill there.
I wouldn't say that. The Geek Cinema article was awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I laughed through reading that whole thing, and my wife was like, "What are you laughing at?" And I said, "Tom got it just right for Maximum Overdrive."
I enjoyed fighting and also Batman. That's fun.
Yeah, that was good too. That was awesome.
Fighting against Watchmen.
Yes. Yeah, the Avengers segment that we did that started this whole journey. Anything else, Kelly? You got anything else?
I think we covered it all.
The day
that's everything. That's all we did.
The David Pinkney interview was great. Having Paul O'Connor from Long Box Graveyard on the show was awesome, too. Everything that we've done, I have not disliked any episode or any segment that we've done for this so far. And, guys, it's going to get better because, I mean, this is episode 25. We've got 25 more episodes to hit to episode 50. And there's so much that I want to do that we all have talked about, you know, that's just coming. That's going to be awesome and going to be amazing.
You can add 25 and 25. Very proud of you.
Different high school, so you know, I
basic math skills.
Add some learning.
I enjoy the
relationship.
I enjoy that we keep insisting that I'm sitting next to Jason, even though we're clearly in different states.
Right? It's
no.
I imagine it as a round table, so Kelly's in front. Yeah.
Well, technically, Tim, if it's a round table, no one's in front.
Everyone is equal.
You could be in front of somebody else, though, like you're in front, and then people are to the side, but to them, they're in front, and we're to the side.
Well, if Kelly's in front of you, then Tom's not sitting next to me.
It's my round table.
Everyone's round table is different.
That's right. That's right.
This round table of life.
This ain't no Hall of Justice here.
That's like a Mobius. It's like a more like a Mobius strip table. That was an MC Escher joke.
I don't know what your round table would be, Tom, but clearly it's not appropriate for the show. All right. I have been reading Shadowhawk, the Jim Valentino stuff when Image first came out.
I'm sorry? Yeah.
Well, me too, you know, because I had a preconceived notion about what Shadowhawk would be, and I read the first couple of issues when it came out in the 90s and then kind of fell away from it. But I picked everything up to what I had, which was up to issue 13. So I got all of that, and I was really disappointed in how it all played out. Like, it started off really cool, and it was a really great concept, and it looked like it could have been Image's Batman, in a sense, because you had the Shadowhawk who fights crime or whatever, his version of injustice because of the wrongs that had been committed to him, which made him become Shadowhawk. And he breaks spines, and he's awesome, and all that stuff. But the way that Valentino told the story, it didn't work. It didn't work. You had this one guy, his first arch-villain, which is a guy named Arson that burns things, and then Shadowhawk sets him on fire, and then he, in turn, stays on fire. And then you have a creature from underneath the sewers or whatever called the Liquefier, this big blob lizard type thing. It just became ridiculous, and I was really disappointed with how it turned out.
So I've never read it.
Well,
you're disappointed with Image series from the 90s?
Yeah.
Sound like most people.
Well, Spawn was good. I liked Spawn, and Cyberforce
was good.
Yeah.
Why don't you get rid of
Go on, Tom.
Sorry, I never liked any of those books when they first when Image was a big deal. I guess I got Youngblood, Wildcats, and I kind of stopped there. I was like, well, these two aren't good, the rest will be bad too.
You know, I read Youngblood the other day. I was gonna do it for a back issue, Been to the Future, and I read it and I got so mad at that I can't justify a back issue Been to the Future for Youngblood. It was that horrible.
Jeez. I don't think I've read it since I was 13 or 14 years old.
Oh my god. Don't go back and read it again unless you want to be in a bad mood, like, all day.
I'm good, so I think we're okay.
Let's see here. I don't know if you guys have read this or are planning to read it, but DC, The New Frontier, have any of you read that?
Oh, sure, yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh my god, it's amazing. I am so attached to this series right now. My friend Charlie let me borrow it, and it is beyond anything that I thought it could be. I mean, I saw the movie first. That I think is one of the best DC animated films that they've put out so far. Not the best, but one of the best. But the graphic, like, there's so much in the beginning that they took out that's nowhere near the movie, or they just kind of glanced.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love the tone of it. It feels a whole lot more, and it's because of the time period. It feels a lot more like a big sci-fi book than it does like a superhero book to me, and that fits the art. It's a great book.
Yeah, the artwork really has a big to do with that, at least in giving the overall feel of like this, the late golden age, early silver age. It's, yeah, it's beautiful. I recommend it to anybody. If you haven't had a chance, go pick up the graphic novels. It's in two parts. DC, The New Frontier, must read. All right, if there's nothing else, we're going to take a break for a second, but when we come back, we're going to get this show started. We're going to do some news. Stan Lee canceled a couple of appearances. We'll tell you the reason why, and kind of a big deal, I think. Mark Miller is now the official consultant for Marvel Movies at Fox. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Powered by Geek Energy.
Ladies and gentlemen, are at the news right now. Let's go ahead and get the big one out of the way. Stan Lee canceled several appearances for the conventions and other things that he was doing on the road. The reason for that is at first they put out a press release that said that he had to cancel due to severe circumstances, but they wouldn't elaborate any further into that. And this morning, Stan Lee himself put out a press release that he is now just like Tony Stark, and he had to have a pacemaker put in. Kelly, we'll start with you. The man is 89 years old. A pacemaker to keep him going. Let's get some thoughts from that. What do you think?
Well, clearly he's going to live to be as old as he will be when I'm 89, so.
The cop. That's for sure. But, Tom, what do you think about that?
It's a 90-year-old guy getting a pacemaker. I don't know if we can call it news, but what I love about the Stan Lee press releases are just the language that he insists on to continue to use, or first himself as Generalissimo and the fear not fearless followers. He's Stan Lee, and no one else, not only does no one else speak like that or write like that, but no one else can pull it off. It's just so corny and hokey.
That's why he is the man.
Yeah, it is.
It's going to be a sad day when he goes. I mean, the entire world is going to shut down, at least for a couple of minutes, when everybody figures out that Stan Lee's not with us anymore.
I think the entire world will find a way to keep going, Tim.
No. The creator of the universe. Mm-hmm. Have a 10-minute moment of silence. Not
sure. That'll be it.
Yeah. Well, you want lunch. New York will shut down. We'll be like, what's going on? Oh. Stanley, I better be quiet for a minute. See?
It'll be a commemorative holiday.
Jason?
Yeah, I don't think this came from Stan Lee. It's missing. Look, there's no Excelsior in there.
I know. That's like his tag, his stamp.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Tom's right there. His verbiage and his word choice, only he can pull it off. I mean, how often do you hear someone refer to themselves as Generalissimo and actually get away with it?
he's not a Spanish dictator.
Yeah. He could be, though.
You guys ever want the Stan Lee documentary that's on Netflix, right?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
That gives a great insight into when he's not doing anything comic book. You know, when he's just chilling out and hanging out at home with his wife. And it gives a nice little history lesson on how he started, and eventually where he went to, like his official Marvel, and then when he was like their liaison to do other things. With this pacemaker, that's going to keep him alive forever. Stanley's going to be more anything else. So
it's going to keep him. It's going to keep him alive forever. That's what you take from it, that he's now immortal because of the... I think we need to explain medical technology to Tim.
No, no, I'm ignorant of that, so...
Well, I mean, look, it brings the idea of mortality into, you know, when you hear something like this. Okay, yeah, he got this to increase mortality, but clearly this guy's getting old. And you, when you read that, and you, look, I know Stanley's old, and I read that, I was like, oh, wait, he's 89 years old? All right, dude's already living on borrowed time to a certain degree.
See, the big thing that was going around when he was, when he started his convention tour this year was that it was going to be his farewell tour. And Jason, you and I even talked about that when I was getting ready to go to Chicago. With this, with having a pacemaker put in, that's a big deal for him. I mean, that obviously says that he is his age, and that it may be time for him to slow down or to even stop. But I don't see that happening at all. It's Stanley. He's going to do it up until the day before he dies.
He's a very good-looking 89-year-old. I mean, his scene in the new Spider-Man movie, I mean, that was great. He looked awesome.
All right.
No, he's still here. So, I mean, he still looks, he's pretty, gets around pretty good.
Yep.
That's for sure.
Well, yeah. Let's move on. Let's go on to Mark Miller, who is now officially the consultant for Marvel Comics at 20th Century Fox. If anybody doesn't know who Mark Miller is, comic book writer, he did Kick-Ass. He did Wanted, which they made into a movie. He wrote Civil War, controversial and very epic storyline a couple of years ago. He did Ultimate Fantastic Four, The Ultimates, Marvel Knights, and the list for him goes on and on. 20th Century Fox has hired him as their official consultant for all things Marvel, which tells me that this is going to start to become a competition with whatever 20th Century Fox is going to keep. As of right now, they have Daredevil. They have the entire X-Men franchise. They're still talking about the Fantastic Four reboot and whatever else Marvel has. Is there anything else that they have, or does that about cut?
I think that's it. Those are the three.
Yeah. But that's a pretty big chunk of the Marvel universe on its own.
Yeah.
And then Disney has just about everything else, with the exception of Blade, which is still with New Line Cinema.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The Amazing Spider-Man and Ghost Rider, which are all sitting at Columbia Pictures, and I don't think there's anything beyond it. If there is, it's not awesome enough to mention. But I think that Miller's a good choice for that. He's a great writer. I mean, take a look at Civil War. That encompassed the entire Marvel universe, at least on the heroes aspect, with some villains thrown in there for good measure. But it's a good choice. It really is. And if 20th Century Fox is not going to let go of the X-Men franchise and the Fantastic Four franchise and anything else that they have, then they need somebody like what Disney has in the form of Joss Whedon to kind of steer them in the right direction on where they need to go. Jason, you first. What do you think about this?
Yeah, it's a good choice. I mean, obviously Joss Whedon and the actors for the Avengers deserve a lot of the credit for how successful it was, but their entire story was pulled from the Ultimates. Someone blowing up a balloon? What's going on?
It's like someone playing the bongos.
We'll cut that noise there and start here when I say go. Kelly, we'll jump to you. Go. Kelly, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, I'm a really big fan of Kick-Ass, so I think he'll do a good job.
Now, see, with Kick-Ass, I saw the movie first. I didn't read the series until well after I had seen the movie. But both are good in their own right. I mean, the movie obviously had a lot to do with the graphic novel, but with the direction that he let it go, it was still a good movie. Tom, what are your thoughts?
I don't think it's a bad choice at all. I think it's good just that to have someone who's a legitimate A-list comic writer in there, giving their two cents on every decision they make for the Marvel properties. It shows that Fox is taking the property seriously, and I think you're right, Tim. The idea is going to be pretty much a direct competition between Fox and Marvel Studios. I don't know that Miller is the best choice of the A-list comics writers to do it. I'd almost rather it be Bendis, or even
Bendis stretched way thin as it is, though. I mean, if he took on something like that, I think he'd have a nervous breakdown.
No, but yeah, sure. I don't know the. I'm just sort of spitballing it. I mean, Quesada, he's pretty busy too, I suppose, so that's probably not going to happen. But Miller's fine. The one thing is that I didn't like Civil War that much, but it's not like he's in here writing all the movies, so it doesn't really, that really doesn't matter. It's just someone who knows the characters and knows how to treat them respectfully, and that's what you're looking for.
That's right. Now look at this with what DC's, or with what Disney has going with Whedon and all of that stuff, and now Fox with Miller. DC, I mean, they are slow to get going. I mean, they're talking about the Justice League movie.
Yeah.
They're talking about getting their cinematic franchise going, but nothing is getting done. I mean, Marvel is...
Well, the DC cinematic universe they're planning is going to start with Man of Steel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the plan. Man of Steel is going to be sort of the opening salvo in the DC cinematic universe. I'm sure we can expect to see some sort of after credit sequence there.
A camp of Batman or the Flash.
Yeah, something like that. You know, I think the one big question still kind of sitting there is if they bring in a Green Lantern, are they going to stay with what's his face?
Ryan Reynolds.
Or Ryan Reynolds.
No.
Yeah, or are they going to bring in somebody else?
No, they need to distance themselves from that.
I don't like the movie. I don't hate Ryan Reynolds. If they don't do another Green Lantern movie and put Ryan Reynolds as Green Lantern in the Justice League movie,
I don't really
have fun with that.
I don't see him as a Hal Jordan. I see him as a Guy Gardner.
No.
No?
No.
John Stewart?
Jesus.
Definitely not John Stewart. What?
The problem with that one. Let's suppose Robert Downey Jr. from Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, right on. He got a nomination for that.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of Robert Downey Jr. and Green Lantern, you know who would make a really good Jon Stewart? Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
Really?
Sure. I guess so.
Yeah.
I kind of think Don Cheadle's one of those actors who can play anything, though. He's so fantastic.
Yeah, that's why he'd make a good Jon Stewart.
He'd make a good Guy Gardner, too.
It's going to be Will Smith.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Getting jiggy with it.
Love me some Will Smith, man. Come on. Wild Wild West was on TV last night. It's still terrible, just so we know.
Wow.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
It's because that makes no sense whatsoever.
Horrendous, horrendous.
It makes sense. It just doesn't make good sense.
The giant mechanical spider machine.
Yeah. Oh, so, all of a sudden, there's a huge spider. I love that.
So, with that being said, we're gonna cast the Green Lantern movie that DC's gonna come out with, and we're gonna have Don Cheadle play Hal Jordan and Will Smith play Guy Gardner. So.
Perfect.
Did I miss something? What has happened?
We could have Jon Stewart from The Daily Show play Jon Stewart.
Oh, that would be the best movie ever.
And Stephen.
I'd see that.
And Stephen Colbert as Sinestro or Kilowog.
No, Sinestro. You're right the first time.
John, okay, we're good with that.
Are we just trying to be as ridiculous as possible with these?
I think we're semi-serious here.
Right? You have...
No, I'm right. I'm one with Kelly. Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert as Hal Jordan. No, Jon Stewart and Sinestro. I'm on board.
Yeah. Jon Stewart is Jon Stewart. That'd be...
Yeah.
Okay. With that, we're going to take a break for a second and try and wrap our brains around that. When we come back, we're going to do the pull list. Comic books we chose for you, the listener, to read. That'll be Cable and Deadpool number 25. And Young Justice, number 25. Oh, did we choose those because we're on the 25th episode? Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be back in a second.
I hate you.
All right, I'm just going to take a quick look at what's on my pull list. What's this music? What's going on?
Coming this fall on NBC.
What?
A new reality series.
What the hell?
Geek Intervention.
What are you doing in my house?
He was hooked. Addicted. To a website.
I'm not addicted to StashMyComics.com.
He couldn't stop cataloging his comic books.
I can stop.
He couldn't stop writing member reviews.
I can stop. I have to go to work.
Locked in a spiral of self-destruction.
It's not...
Inching closer to death with each passing second.
Oh my God. Why are you playing that music?
Wednesdays on NBC.
Well, I'm not watching because Wednesday night is comic book night.
Oh, really?
Yes, really, yes.
Well, is the new Walking Dead out this week?
Yeah, I'm actually going to the comic book shop now. It's, do you want a ride or something?
Well, if you're going that way, I guess.
All right, let's go. I'm going now.
Geek Intervention, Wednesdays on NBC.
All right, we are at the pull list. These are the comic books that we chose for you, the listener, to read. It's all about the number 25 today. Jim Carrey had the number 23. We have number 25. Jason, let's go with what you chose first. Cable and Deadpool, number 25. Go ahead and give us a little bit of a rundown on what this is about.
It's basically a prequel to Messiah Complex. Like, if you ever read Messiah Complex, it's the like how Cable got to the point of being able to get hope.
Okay, right on.
And it's basically teaming them up again because people love seeing Cable with Deadpool.
This issue was like one big foreshadowing event. Because like at the end when Cable is like, we gotta go, I gotta go, you know, this isn't the last time I'm gonna see you, but it's not goodbye, and Deadpool's like, well, you know, why do we have to wait 13 issues before we get together again, and, you know, there should be a Deadpool ongoing series, there should be 9 ongoing series, there should be a Deadpool core, and all that stuff, and a lot of that actually came to be, or was going on when that issue came out.
Yeah, I think Deadpool had the regular ongoing, and then there was like a Deadpool team up maybe that was going on at that time too.
Yeah.
But no, I just liked it because I was a big fan of Cable Deadpool when that was out with Fabian Nicieza writing, and this was just, you know, a nice little, because Deadpool's overexposed to begin with, and he's the kind of character that on his own is just too much sugar, I guess. But when he's paired with a straight character like Cable, it's better because, you know, he gets to play off Cable, and, you know, it makes Cable less of like an uptight douche, and, you know.
I honestly have to say that this is the most enjoyment I've had out of Deadpool in any incarnation that I've read him in. Like, I got a sour taste in my mouth from reading Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe. That was not anything like what I expected it to be. And the only exposure I had from Deadpool up to this point was the stuff from the old New Mutants title and early stuff in X-Force. So
yeah, when he's not really Deadpool.
Right. Right, when the character is still very fresh, and Liefeld had a direction that he wanted to go with him, and then other people took him, and this is what he eventually became. I like how he constantly breaks the fourth wall, especially in this, and he's always looking to us in the panels, you know, being like, the readers are not going to like this. Why do you have to be so cryptic? But Kelly, let's dive into this issue. What do you think about it?
I thought it was really good. This is actually the first Deadpool issue that I've read. But I enjoyed it. I mean, obviously I knew about the character, and so I enjoyed that he's funny.
Did you notice that his Deadpool symbol was on the bottom of his boots?
No, I was trying to read it really fast. I was about to run out of time reading it, so.
I noticed that. I thought that was really neat that he had those on the bottom of his boots. Like, only Deadpool would put that there.
You know? Yeah.
Tom, what did you think about this?
Could I talk about Messiah Complex instead? Because I'm still reading this issue. I'll say this, you know, I've read Cable and Deadpool before, and I want to go back. What always confused me, because as we know, I dropped out of comics for a couple of years, and I came back. When I left comics, Deadpool was a generic Rob Liefeld mercenary. When I came back, he was a fourth wall breaking lunatic.
Yeah, you can thank Joe Kelly for that.
Yeah, I think I'll be sure to send him a missive or maybe a tweet. Because I love the Deadpool character, and maybe you're right, maybe he works best in small doses, but I, quite frankly, I don't know that I've ever read a book with Deadpool that I didn't enjoy him in.
Agreed. Like, the early stuff is still good, in a sense, like for the 90s it was all right, but where he is now is what makes him so enjoyable to the masses, I think. But
Deadpool now is like Wolverine of the 90s, where he's everywhere.
He's everywhere, but he's not as popular as Wolverine was in the 90s, though.
No, and Deadpool's got such an upbeat attitude about all of this. Like, when he's in the grocery store, and he's looking at all the diapers, and the cashier's like, are those... Did your wife send you? And he just kind of turns around and looks to him, and he's like, do I look like the type of guy that would be married? these are for my friend. No, they're not for my friend, but, like, never mind. It's good. I enjoyed this. I had a lot of fun reading it, like I said. The artwork's really good. It's very comic book, very animated, very smooth and witty dialogue. Like you said, Jason, how Deadpool and Cable are... off of each other, and it kind of makes it a more even dose of the two of them, because when Deadpool's in a scene, he kind of commands the scene. Like, when for whatever reason, they had that massive mutant-eating-only monster that chased
them. Oh, that's Predator X, man. You gotta get up with your X stuff.
I'm way behind.
Sure,
it's Predator X. He eats mutants.
But the thing that I was not expecting, and I should have expected it with Deadpool being in there, is that he looks to Cable, like Cable and him had just had a kind of falling out a little bit. Like, Cable's like, I don't pay you to ask questions. I just pay you to do this. And that Monster X or whatever it is, Project X, comes running up to him and does all this, and Deadpool's like, no, I got it. This is what you pay me for, after all. And then the next panel, you see this monster eat Deadpool. It's just like, whenever he's in an issue, it's totally unexpected. And you need to expect it. And even when you do expect it, he does something that you don't expect. And that just makes something like this so enjoyable to read.
You know, interesting side note, I think it was Loki who told Deadpool that he was in a comic book.
That honestly would make a lot of sense.
That's pretty funny. You know, in the first 10 minutes of X-Men Origins Wolverine, where I still thought it was going to be a good movie, I really liked Deadpool. Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. I thought it worked. I thought it was funny.
He was.
And then the movie was terrible. And then they bring Deadpool back. And I was like, oh good. Oh no, look, they sewed his mouth shut.
Yeah.
What the? Like, they'd never read a comic in their lives. So you know what? In hindsight, it's a really good thing that Mark Miller's going over there.
Yeah. So they can get Deadpool right. Change.
Yeah.
But all right, Tom. Let's start it with you. Final thoughts. Cable and Deadpool number 25. 1 through 10, what do you give this?
8.
Right on. Any reasons why?
Because I like the number 8. I feel like saying it. I feel like using the number 8 today.
Sounds very comfortable. Okay, Kelly?
Good.
A final thought?
This is the kind of the hard-hitting comic book criticism you get from StashMyComicsPodcast.com, whatever that is. I like the number 8.
Fair enough. Fair. Kelly?
You're just on it today. Doing the most.
8 is enough. 8 is enough.
Like, okay. 2.5. Yeah, okay. Anyways, Kelly, final thoughts. 1 through 10. What do you give?
I'm going to give it an 8 as well.
Awesome.
There we go.
The art was nice. Story was good. It was witty. Solid 8.
Jason, final thought.
Better give us an 8.
I actually had planned to give it an 8, so.
There we go. Yeah.
I have a feeling Tim's going to give it an 8.5 just to be a contrarian.
No. Like, in all honesty, when I read this and I wrote it down, I gave it a solid 8 all the way through.
Here we go.
All on
okay, hard. I think this is the first time we've all actually agreed on a book.
Yeah, artwork was an 8. I love the artwork. Story was an 8. That was great, too. We're all an 8. Tom, you are our telepath.
Only on the 25th podcast will think her like this.
Oh, we should have given it a 25. Oh. Darn.
Damn it.
So what is the average grade?
8.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we're so good at math.
Right,
Tim, you're like the Count from Sesame Street. You just make...
The Count died.
Well, yeah. Why?
What?
Bring it down.
The guy who plays the count died.
Oh, I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, how did the puppet die?
Oh, the puppet's fine. Don't worry. Just the guy who just done the count of the voice of the count forever, I think, died like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just I don't know. Okay, let's move on, guys. Kelly, you chose Young Justice number 25. Somehow, I don't think this is gonna get an 8.
Yeah, I just kind of chose it because I had to pick something that had 25 in it, and that's what I had on hand.
All right.
Well, give us a rundown of Young Justice number 25, In Space, by the way.
Which they don't end up in space until the end of the issue.
I know.
I was a little disappointed, but because I hadn't read it before either. But I think it's kind of dropped in the middle of it, and like they're having like this competition where they're shooting arrows, like Arrowette is like shooting arrows against like Artemis and stuff like that. I didn't really know what was going on.
See, that made a lot of sense as to why this issue was chosen, because if you had read it, I don't think you would have chosen.
I wouldn't have. Well, I might have just because it's like one of the only things I have that's 25 in it. So, like, I've only had like 3 things to choose from.
Hey, be lucky. She could have chose Powerpuff Girls 25.
I couldn't have because I don't have those with me.
I'd have taken that. So, Kelly, give us your thoughts on Young Justice number 25.
I mean, I like the series, and I don't think this issue really represented the series well.
No.
because you're kind of dropped in the middle of the story.
Yeah.
I think you have to read the previous issues. I don't know. I downloaded these a long time ago, and I haven't read them yet.
Wow. I noticed that Peter David was the writer for this issue. Now, that intrigues me on its own because it's Peter David, and he's a favorite of mine, so that'll make me want to check out the earlier stuff.
Have you never read Young Justice?
No.
Peter David wrote the entire. He wrote the entire series.
Oh,
it's great. Too.
Issues did it go?
Yeah, it's seventy, I think, or something like that.
70?
Okay. Might have been. Yeah, but it's a fantastic series. One of my favorite series of all time. I love Young Justice.
Well, this issue doesn't represent it pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, with that.
Well, you're dropped into the middle of what's going on. Like, you don't know anything about, you know. Look, as someone who's read it, it's, you know, I remember reading it in the story, and it makes sense, and it's a good issue.
Yeah, like but, with this, it feels like they're closing up some things and starting a whole lot of other stuff to move on to the next leg of the series.
Well, yeah, because they bring in two characters that, you know, you might be familiar enough with Robin and Superboy and Wonder Girl to read a Young Justice issue, but they bring in Empress, who at that point had only been around for a couple of issues, and Joy B. Dickles, who had been around for, a couple of issues.
He's the Mr. Magoo lookalike.
Yeah, I guess so. He kind of looks more like Mixia's Penelope to me.
I thought Mr. Magoo. That's what I saw. But, all right, so Tom, give me your thoughts on this particular issue of Young Justice 25.
Like we're saying, it drops in between, not in the middle of an arc, between two arcs, really. The thing you got to realize about, about Peter David, is one of my favorite writers, but he is not a big event writer. He's not a splash page writer. His stories are very small, very intimate, and this is no difference. He'll put things in comics that seem really kind of understated and low key, and they're underwhelming. So you look at them kind of as a whole. And Young Justice as a whole is a fantastic series that works on a lot of different levels. Joy B. Dickles, for example, all these old characters, and there's going to be more old characters in next issues, they are all old comic book characters from like the 40s who are now old men and women.
And like they are also called Old Justice.
Yeah,
they're called Old Justice,
that.
Yes.
At first I thought that the kids were being kind of jerks, like referencing the Justice League. They're Young Justice and they were Old Justice.
No.
That honestly makes a lot of sense now. So.
Yeah, and also it's this book was created as a response to sort of the dark and gritty, quote unquote, image of comics of the 90s, and this was kind of a response to using teen characters in a lighter, more hearted fashion. And what's great is when Batman or whoever shows up in Young Justice throughout the run, he'll say things like, he'll say things to Robin like, you don't act so silly when you're not around your friends. Because it's a really kind of a comic oriented book to a certain degree.
It is. I would totally put this series in front of my son or my daughter. I think my son would get a bigger kick out of this than my daughter would. She's getting into more of the serious stuff like the Batman and all that jazz, but my son's still 8 years old, so he would totally love this. And that's a big appeal for me.
And you got the Todd Nock art, which is doesn't work with everything, but really is perfect on this book. So this individual issue is, it's no great shakes, but as seen as a part of a larger whole, it's just a phenomenal series, and one of the ones that's easy to kind of read cover to cover. It's only 70 issues. It's not a lot.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a great – the whole thing's a great read.
Jason, thoughts?
Yes, I mean, same thing, basically. It's – as a single issue, it doesn't work, but as you read from one to whenever it ends, the whole story thing – if I remember correctly, things happen in, like, issue 50, 60, 70 that call back to the first few issues. But the whole series works because you have one writer on the whole thing.
See, one thing I noticed that he did was, like, something that happened with Impulse in issue 2. He waited 23 issues to reveal what he wished for in issue 25, which was that giant spaceship.
it was like the girl that was Empress being in the crowd at an earlier issue of Young Justice.
Yeah, she was there, and he makes reference to that, too. He's like, she really was there. Take a look at issue 16, and you'll see her there.
Yep.
So.
And the whole book is really about Secret.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Ghost Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole book, the entire all 70 issues is about her. And did you see the episode of Young Justice Task Force, whatever, International, whatever the hell it's called, the animated series, the Secret episode of that? That was a good
it doesn't
episode.
Have the word Task Force or International attached to it. What are you talking about?
I think you're mixing up that crappy Justice League series from the 90s.
I think I am. You ever see the episode of Earth's Mightiest Justice League where, the animated series?
Takes on Captain Batman or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So Tom, final thoughts 1 through 10. What do you give Young Justice number 25?
Well, here's the thing. This is, like we said, it's not a great standalone issue to just pull out of the out of the thin air and review, and I don't think Kelly would have done it if it wasn't for the whole forced, awkward 25 gimmick. But since it's Young Justice, I'm going to give it a 10.
At least we don't have, like, a flashy chromium, like, front page or whatever for this. We could do that, like, have a variant. Never mind. I'm going on something totally different. Kelly, final thoughts.
Holographic
cover, yeah. Okay. All right.
Like, I've only read like the first three issues of the series, and then I've read 25.
Wow.
Because I'm busy and I don't have time to sit down and like read comics a lot. But I mean, like, I do love the characters, and like, because I do watch the animated series as well, and so I can see the parallels from the comic and the show. And, yeah, as a standalone issue, it's kind of jarring, I guess, if you haven't read the rest of it. But, I do enjoy the series, what I've read so far, which is not a lot, but, I don't know, I can't rate it. I need to read the rest of it. I really can't rate it.
All right, so Kelly is inconclusive. Jason, final thoughts.
So Kelly gives it a 10, too. Awesome, move on.
Jason, hopefully you give this book a 10.
I love Young Justice, but I also want to point out, because no one else did anyone else crack up when you see the big crate with the spaceship in it and you read what was on the crate?
It said something Machina or something.
It said Fedeus Ex Machina.
Yeah. Woohoo!
That's fun. I just got that.
I don't get it.
But it's merging FedEx and Deus Ex Machina, which is God and Machine, meaning it's like a thing that happened. Well, Tom can tell you about a Deus Ex Machina.
Yes. I can. It's a.
You're the playwright.
You want me to start lecturing you about ancient Greek theater? Because that's where it comes from.
I just wanted you to be the playwright and give us a quick explanation. But
God, it literally means God in the machine, because lots of Greek tragedies would end with the gods being lowered to the stage in some sort of contraption and solving the problems of mortals because they're too stupid to figure it out themselves.
That's still like
so,
today.
So Deus Ex Machina is when an ending comes out of nowhere.
I know it was a video game, right?
Yeah.
That's not what I'm talking about, but okay.
There was also a comic book called Ex Machina.
But we're talking about the literary term.
Right on.
I remember the video game Deus Ex Machina Task Force, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Super espionage.
Task Force?
Yeah.
Why does everything have to be Task Force with you?
I think it approves most things.
Jason, so what would you give this a 10?
I'll give it a 10.
Okay. Can I be that guy and not give it a 10? Or should I?
No.
Sure.
Okay.
Do what you want.
It's a free country, man. Go ahead.
This.
We're not actually sitting next to you, so we can't, like, do anything about it.
They don't know that.
Now they do.
We had a whole conversation about it.
Wait, to shatter the dream. Anyway. This... As far as introductory for me, once I noticed that Peter David wrote it and then through discussion with you guys figured out that he stuck with the entire series, that alone gets a 10 out of me, because Peter David's a fantastic writer. One of my favorite stories is a single issue that he did of Web of Spider-Man number 13. I did a back issue bin review of it. Go check it out. It's really good. I gave that a 10 specifically because of the way that Peter David writes. And like you said, he's not a quick writer. He's a not a long-winded writer, but he stretches it out over several issues, and he keeps things that took.
He's a slow burn writer.
Yeah, yeah. It takes a little while to boil, but when it does, it's really, really good. So yeah, I'll give it a 10. What the hell?
And two final notes there. Not only did Peter David stick with the whole series, but so did Todd Knock.
See, that's unique in its own, because very seldom do creative teams stick together like that.
Yeah, it's a lot like Bendis Bagley and Ultimate Spider-Man, except you know, they got to finish their run together.
Right on. Well, right on. We're going to take a break for a second. When we come back, we've got trivia. Tom's got trivia this week. And after some trivia, we're going to finally lay Maximum Overdrive to rest. So that way they can all laugh at me about something else. Be back in just a second. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy. Ladies and gentlemen, we are at trivia. It's a good one this week because it's super cool. So, you know, before the rules are read, it needs to be stated that with this trivia, we're going to be giving away a lot of stuff. So the first five unique responses each get 1,000 points to go toward the giveaways that we got going on at Stash My Comics right now. In addition to that, whoever guesses the trivia correctly not only gets 2,500 points, 25, uh-huh, yeah, all right, but they also get two digital downloads from us this week. So with that being said, Tom, what do you got for us today?
Okay, well, first I have to read the rules of the trivia. So let's read the rules of the trivia. One, you must be a registered member of Stash My Comics to qualify. Two, when you enter your answer, you must also put your username on the forums underneath your answer so we can notify you via Prime Meridian. Sorry, private message. I think this will help bring some much-needed traffic. Wait, that's a you don't include your parentheticals? What is this? Don't include your subtext? I'm just reading along. Three.
We are slacking.
Wait, this is the best episode ever. I think my favorite part of the podcast is when Jason blew snot rockets into our listeners' ears.
Me too.
All right.
Doing the most.
Number three. Anyone that is an admin of any forum on Stash My Comics that works directly with the podcast is not eligible to play.
That means everybody.
Yeah, we know. Four. The first correct answer wins. Once you have a correct answer, it will be noted on the comments section of that podcast, and the winner will be notified via PM. Five. Private message. I got it.
Yes.
Okay. Five. If no winner is found before the airing of the next week's podcast, then the prize is forfeit, and we move on to next week. That's it. Just five.
Okay, we're good. So with that trivia question, what is it this week?
All right, so in the spirit of our weekly distraction, I thought I'd have a team-based trivia question.
Wait a second, Tom. You have to say all this in your movie phone voice.
Oh,
okay. in honor of the weekly distraction, I thought I'd have a team-based trivia question this week. Today's question is this. How many individual characters have at one time or another been members of the Fantastic Four?
Oh, and it's not four.
No, it's...
Well, you know it's more than four.
Now this has to be clarified because there are what-if issues that have alternate members of the Fantastic Four. Do those count?
No, just
no,
in...
That's a what-if issue.
Right? But they were still
just
in the Fantastic...
Just in standard... No, they weren't. Just in... Listen, do I have to explain continuity in 6 minutes?
Right?
Just in regular continuity.
Okay.
A whole another podcast.
Yes. Okay, with that, we've been, they and I have been defending. They have been I have been defending... Maximum Overdrive.
I'm sorry. You just started off saying we, and then you changed it to they and I. That's still we.
But it's separate. Like, it's you guys and then me. So, yeah.
Which is still us or
us
we.
Us versus them.
That's us versus me. Or, yeah,
which is
whatever.
Them.
I've been defending.
No, we should plan these things out before we do them.
But we should script it.
Then they wouldn't be cool, because then it'd be like, well,
Or just get on with it.
Yeah.
This can be the longest podcast. I have somewhere to be at 6:45.
It's 58. We got plenty of time. But when people listen to this, they're going to be like, it's not 4:58. It's 5 o'clock. Anyways, we're laying Maximum Overdrive to rest. No more jokes about that. I've had enough.
Okay, but you keep bringing it up.
Yeah, and we keep shooting you down.
But
I'd rather never speak of that film again.
I think that for the next 25 episodes, we need to talk about Mystery Men and Night at the Roxbury.
I'm not talking about more movies I'm not going to watch.
Bye.
I would like to not talk about. We can put all three of those to rest, as far as I'm concerned.
there has not been enough discussion about William H. Macy's non-Oscar nominated performance.
There has been. There has been enough discussion about it. I promise you.
So good, though.
Oh, my God.
Right, I'm sure.
I guess everything's relative.
Relative to the...
Very relative.
The Green Goblin truck and Maximum Overdrive. Oh, right.
It's like you only brought up putting this to rest so you could talk about them some more.
Yeah. I'm tricky. I'm a tricky host.
Okay, Run DMC.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, no more talk about Maximum Overdrive, I promise.
You just
keep bringing it up.
But we're
never, ever getting back together.
Yeah, I know. But, all right, we'll be back. When we come back, it's a weekly distraction. Superheroes Unite. What makes a good team, and how have they changed over the years? Also, we're going to each go into what we think is the ultimate team. I think I chose something a lot different than what you guys did, but we'll get to that in just a minute.
Geek Hotline, how may I help you?
Hello. I was looking for a solution on how to better track my comic book collection. I've been using memory and pen and paper for a while, but it's not really working out well for me. What can you suggest?
That's a very good question, sir. I'll have to consult my fax machine.
I don't understand.
Excuse me, sir. I'm going to have to ask you to stay quiet while I concentrate in order to better serve you. Since you broke my concentration, I'm going to have to go over to my next machine here.
Why are you using Morse code? I think I better call back another time.
I'm afraid I'm not getting any answer to your question here. Let me just move over to this next piece of technology that I have.
Is that a foghorn? Am I hearing a foghorn?
Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry. I can't get the answer to your question at this time. But if I can ask you to hold the line, please, I will get that answer for you as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Did he just drive off? Heck with it. I'll just use stashmycomics.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are at the weekly distraction. Forget the fact that the movie that cannot be named will no longer be talked about anymore. The fact that we're on episode 25 and it is awesome, amazing, and spectacular. Forget the fact that we're recording on a Saturday and not a Thursday. This is the weekly distraction, that which you will be talking about for the rest of the week. Superheroes Unite. Everybody go in your superhero pose? No?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
All right. what makes a good team, and how have they changed over the years? Okay, so with that, way back in the Golden Age, you had a lot of separate comic books, like with Superman and the Spectre, Our Man, Dr. Midnight, all of that stuff, several people or lots of people were reading several different issues and things like that. And the companies got the idea that if they put all of these characters into one book, then maybe people wouldn't have to go out and purchase all of the separate ones that their favorite characters could be in one issue. I think that where it all got started was with the Justice Society, and then it just kind of went from there, and then you have teams like the Justice League, which is one of the famous. You have Avengers, you have the X-Men, and that even goes further into the other X-teams like X-Force, X-Factor, things like that, even what Claremont did with Extreme X-Men. And the list just goes on and on and on.
X-Men Task Force?
Yeah. No, the Extreme X-Men Task Force, because you have to have the Extreme in there.
Right on. But with that, I mean, with the superhero, you also have the super team. You know, one superhero cannot take care of a dire situation by himself. He has to have his teammates, whether he wants to have them there or not, and they in turn have to save the world together. So let's talk about that. Jason, let's go ahead and jump with you first. Superhero teams, what do you think about them? How do you think that they have evolved over the years?
I don't know if they've evolved. I mean, you still have basically the formula of, you know, put all these different characters together, have them function as a unit, and, you know, conquer the world-threatening threats that they couldn't do alone.
World-threatening threats.
Yeah. World-threatening threats, yep.
Eloquent.
Quite a turn of phrase, sir. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, actually, I was thinking about having, like, accountants tax force. But
did you say,
anyway.
Did you say tax force?
Yes. But yeah, I don't think there's been much evolution to sticking a bunch of characters together and, you know, coming up with some huge threat that they can only tackle together. We're still doing it. It's been around for 60 years.
Right on. That's very true. But with teams like the Justice League, I mean, those have the big hitters like Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman, obviously. And then you have the rest, which would be Aquaman and Green Lantern and Martian Manhunter, The Flash, and then whoever else is the C-listers or the reserves. But, like, and even with Marvel, I mean, the Avengers, with those two teams in particular, the major heroes, they always make it or at least the writers or whoever pulls the strings behind Marvel and DC, they always make it to seem like if you make it to that team, then that character has made it in the comic book world. Like, if you're a member of the Justice League, then that's a badge of honor, you know. That's something to show and to be proud of. And the Avengers, if you're an Avenger, you're an Avenger, you know. That's nothing to sneeze at, you know? Like,
no, just the way you said it. If you're an Avenger, you're an Avenger.
go ahead, Jason.
The only thing is where you saying the teams that it was all these characters in separate books, they put them into one book. There's only two teams that are like that, the Avengers and Justice League. All the other teams are just team books. Justice Society, there's no, you know, there's not a Justice Society book anymore, but there was no, you know, Golden Age Flash book or Golden Age Green Lantern book.
Well, no, because all of those characters were put together in that
right.
title
or
specifically,
like, well,
because those characters I don't think could have held a title on their own.
Well, outside of Wolverine, nobody in the X-Men really carries a title.
Well, yeah.
There's no Cyclops ongoing.
Gambit has an ongoing now.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that's the exception. Yeah, but Gambit's awesome.
But nothing as consistent as Wolverine. I understand.
Yeah.
But like what I was saying though, I mean, and Tom Kelly jump in on this too. But like being a member of those two specific teams though, you know, that's something that characters should be proud of. Am I right?
Well, I mean, I want to jump back on the point. I think this is where the evolution of the team book comes in, where I think, Tim, you're right in that when they first start putting them together, the publishers said, well, here are our popular characters. Let's put them all in one book. And it wasn't so people can just see all their adventures at the same time without buying other books. It was so that publishers would say, well, here's our popular characters, put them in one book so people will buy this book too.
Right.
So we can sell more books. And I think the evolution is that the people who grew up loving those books began taking over the industry, and now team books aren't just written because it's another way to sell books. Team books are written because people love them. And that's why we've seen, I think, over decades' time now, team books kind of being popular on their own without having strong supporting characters. And I think team books go two ways. You can take a character that is a B-lister, C-lister, who's an interesting character who can't support their own title, and give them life as a character in a really strong team book. Conversely, if you do too much of that, then you've got your team becomes uninteresting or unimpressive.
They become
mediocre. It's like during, you know, I went back several years ago to read the Death of Superman trade, and Doomsday, the big gray thing with bones sticking out of him, where it killed Superman for a couple of days. Doomsday, you know, just plows through the Justice League.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, well, of course he did. It's a bunch of nobodies.
That Justice League is like the most non-memorable Justice League ever. It had some guy named Bloodhaven. Booster Gold was a part of that team, and you had Fire and Ice Booster Gold. Or I said Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, and then some other
guy. Gardner? Was he on that one?
He was. He got the snot kicked out of him by Doomsday. Well, see, we remember it now, but.
Well, I mean, obviously, at some point in the past 10, 15 years ago, DC and Marvel figured out that, A, the Justice League should have all the A-list characters.
Yep.
The Avengers should have all the A-list characters, and then, you know, B-listers can be brought in once in a while and spread out among other teams.
Kelly?
Wait.
Go ahead.
I'm still here.
Okay, cut. Jason?
Are you going to die?
I think so.
I'm gone. If he really did die, we're going to feel awful for laughing.
Killed by the common cold.
Jason, you're live.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll take back from your thought.
Okay.
When Jason says, wait a minute, and then he cuts out because he thought he died, he's back alive. So when I say go, go.
Tom, you said in the past 10 years that they figured it out that, you know, the A-list characters need to be on the teams?
10, 15 years, whatever, yeah.
When you said that, it just made me think about Grant Morrison's JLA, when they restarted that, and it was excellent. That kind of seems when they, you know.
Hey, which one was that? Wait, Grant Morrison and which team was that? Was that the Jim Lee?
No. The Grant Morrison from the 90s, JLA. Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, Martian Manhunter.
Oh, yeah, Rocket. Okay.
Okay.
What's your point?
When you said that the past 10 years, that was the book I immediately thought of as, you know, being the book that kind of brought A-list characters, you know, to the team.
I think that's what I was talking about. I think that at that time, is when, like, team books, I guess, started to go in a different direction, and it wasn't just about them battling the next disaster that's going to come to their Earth, but it was more in-depth about how the dynamic of the team works at that time. Because with that run, it doesn't focus on the big three, but, like, Martian Manhunter was a big part of that title, like, JLA, and that's where he shined the most, I think. And then you had, like, Marvel was doing West Coast Avengers, which made no sense to me, but it took all of their C-list characters and they threw an Iron Man on top of that and put those guys together. But that was the same as like what the Avengers was doing at the time. I think personally, before New Avengers came out, pre-Civil War stuff, when Bendis did that and brought the team back together, but it shifted, though, because like it was all about, like I said, them fighting the next big thing, and then it went to team dynamic. So Kelly, what are your thoughts here?
I really enjoy, like, superhero teams. Like, a lot of my favorite series are teams like Teen Titans and Young Avengers are, like, two of my faves. I mean, it's not just about how, like, for me, it's not just about how they fight, like, bad guys together, but it's how they interact with each other as individuals. I think it's more interesting to see, like, their, like, dynamic on a personal level.
Exactly. And with Bendis' run on the Avengers, when Like when they brought Wolverine onto the team, at first Captain America's like, no, we won't have him here. He's a murderer. He's this, he's that. And Iron Man really put it into perspective when he said, you know, back when the original Avengers had formed, that Captain America was that extra thing that they needed to make the team flow. And in turn, with the incarnation of the Avengers then, Wolverine was that. I thought that was really cool how they played on how it was before and how it is now. So, Jason, let's get some more thoughts on this.
All right, well, I'll address the second part of the topic, which was what makes a good team.
Right.
It's definitely a team that can play off each other, play off their strengths, and which, going back to your example of New Avengers, that was a great book just because the characters played off each other so well. Spider-Man and Luke Cage play off each other, you know, with their comedic bits that Bendis writes into it. They play off each other so well that it really makes the book more enjoyable. Just from not, it's not so much a shoot 'em up or whatever. It actually gets on to a personal level and helps you, you know,
I really identify with the characters.
I don't know how you identify with the characters.
Well, I mean, like with the thing that that Cage and his wife are going. Is his?
Oh yeah, okay. I get that. I don't know how you identify with the impenetrable man that, you know.
You can identify with characters that have superpowers.
Because they have super problems.
Exactly.
That made no sense. Okay.
So Kelly, what are your thoughts on that? What do you think makes a good team?
I guess they have, there has to be a large degree of trust and loyalty. I mean, it's obvious, like, to say it, but I mean, all the best teams are ones where they all, like, basically get along and they trust each other.
But they have to have that one shady character that they don't know if they can trust or not.
Like, yeah, that's just for drama's sake, but yeah.
Tom, what do you think makes a good team?
Well, it depends on what you mean by a good team, because what makes a good team dramatically is when the personalities clash. But any, you know, if you try to put yourself and look at it realistically, like I love Bendis' Avengers run, but every once in a while I would look at the team and say, hey, it's Iron Man and a bunch of guys who are good at punching. Which, you know, it's like if I were Captain America, per se, and I wanted to put a team together, I would probably look for more variety in power sets and ability sets and to say, well, what is our team charter supposed to be, and who can really help fulfill that, rather than saying these guys have good hearts. You don't, when you're putting together the Avengers, you don't want guys necessarily who are all going to get along or guys you like personally, but you're going to put together guys who can get the job done. So it's how do you put a team together? As the writer of the book, you got to put together the guys who are going to be give you opportunity for drama and good storytelling. But as the guy on the page who's actually putting the team together, you've got to put together the guys who are going to help you not be dead when you fight Dr. Doom.
That's very true, but also, you know, and the one downfall I think that team books have is you have to have those quote-unquote A-listers in there, too. Otherwise, the book may or may not sell as well as it would if those characters weren't in there. But as far as, like, what I think makes a good team, Kelly, I'm right with you on that as far as, like, team dynamic goes and how they're able to trust each other and interact with each other. The best that I've seen of that is in the X-Men, because in the Marvel Universe, I mean, they're all at fault already because humanity, the majority of humanity hates and despises and fears mutants as it is, and with them being mutants and then having the superpowers on top of that just kind of adds a double dose of hatred for them, and not only do they as themselves have to deal with that, but they have to be on a team where they have to deal with everybody else's insecurities and things like that too. And I think that the X-Men have played that better than anybody else has, because like with the Avengers, like you said, Tom, they're all the heavy hitters, you know, and you with the Fantastic Four, their lives are out in the open, and the only person that's really sad about it all is Ben Grimm, which he shouldn't be, because I think he's the coolest of the Fantastic Four. But anyways,
and they're the only team in, you know, the two universes that are generally despised by, you know, the most of the world. The Avengers, the Fantastic Four, they're loved, Justice League's loved.
Yep.
Except the X-Men.
Right. They hate the X-Men. They've always been in any X-Men comic I've ever read. They've always been considered the outlaws. But it was an interesting twist in Civil War when Tony Stark went to the mansion and sat and had a conversation with Emma Frost to try and convince them to side with him on the pro-registration side. And they, in turn, were like, no, we're going to stay neutral in this. You guys are doing this. They're doing that. We're here. Where were you when we needed help, when everybody was massacring us and when everybody was hating us? Where were you guys when that was going on? You know, and she made a really good point with that. And in the 80s, when they were the outlaws, I mean, when they were in, like, the outback in Australia and stuff like that, and dealing with the Brood and the Morlocks and Mutant Massacre and all that jazz. But since and always, they have always been considered the outcast. And like I said, I think that they have played the team aspect better than anybody else.
That's because they have to. They have to stick together.
Right, and even with all of their inconsistencies and their trust issues and all that stuff, I think they have folded in more villains than anybody else. I mean, Magneto, he taught the New Mutants for a while.
Well, kinda. I mean,
like, Xavier was gone, and Magneto kind of took over. Is that right?
Well, it was Zorn, which was supposedly Magneto, and then not, and then what? I don't know.
Right.
Magneto ran the New Mutants back in, like, the 80s, too.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
yeah. That's right, yeah, because he was in, I thought you were talking about,
Not the Zorn stuff. The stupid purple costume with the M on it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
The worst costume ever made.
Yeah, one of them.
But, like, other villains that they folded in, Emma Frost, the White Queen, she's married to Scott Summers, is that right?
No, nope. They're just together.
Nope. They have fun a lot.
Toad's the Jean Grey school.
Deadpool?
Not really a villain, not really an X-Man.
But he's, well, yeah, okay. There's others, I can't think of them right now, but... they're there. So. But all right, let's get some final thoughts on this. Tom, we'll start with you. Final thoughts on the superhero teams. What do you think? Have they really changed over the years? Are you still using the same system 60 years ago today? And
I think it's generally... Oh, hello.
Not there.
What was that?
What was that?
I have no idea. Okay, Matt, take it back to the end of my question. Tom, when I say go, go ahead with your answer. Go.
I think they're generally the same. Look, Marvel has four franchises. Essentially, they have Fantastic Four, they have Avengers, they have X-Men, and they have Spider-Man. Three of those four are teams, and they have been by design, because team books sell. And you can spin things off of team books.
Spider-Man is an Avenger and a honorary member of the X-Men, so.
X-Men, really? All right. Yeah. That's pretty recent, though, his Avenger membership is very... Until then, he'd been pretty much decidedly a solo character. But I think the biggest change, like, has come from the reasons for putting a team book together. We used to be, hey, we could put our popular characters in a book to sell more copies, And I think the Avengers was that when they put the Avengers together. But Fantastic Four and X-Men were designed as team books in the beginning because, that, you know, we started to realize, hey, this sort of dynamic is interesting. Rather than just having our one hero who's kind of by himself and with no one to talk to, let's put five in a room and see what happens.
Well, here's another question. Do you think that the loner character, the character that works best by himself, should be a part of teams like this? Like, Batman is a prime example of that. Does he honestly belong in the Justice League? I mean, he works best by himself. Or if he has to have somebody with him, Robin, you know? But
he works fine in the Justice League because he's a control freak. And he's basically, you know, telling everybody what to do.
Yeah, but is he the quote-unquote team leader, though? I mean, if he is, then...
Oh.
I disagree, but okay.
See, I always saw Superman as the leader of the Justice League.
Superman is like the... He's the leader in the fact that he'll be the first one there, but Batman's the guy calling the shots, telling people, you know, what to do to best counteract the problem.
Right on. Okay, that makes sense. But then what about the Avengers? I mean, like, who...
Oh, Cap's the leader.
Well, yeah. That's defined, but in New Avengers, does Wolverine belong on that team when he himself works best alone, or even with him now in X-Force? Spider-Man, for example.
Spider-Man's the character that doesn't really need to be on a team.
You know, and I hate to always take it back here, but with New Avengers, what Bendis did when they were trying to recruit Daredevil, you know, he kind of put it best, that when they were like, we want you on this team, we think you would be a good part of this team. He's like, no, I don't do teams. You know, I work best by myself. And sometimes the choice of character that they put in there doesn't make sense. I could see why they would want to have him there. But like with Doctor Strange, does Doctor Strange honestly belong on a team? Maybe as a reserve member, but not as a constant part. You know, does that
make sense? Well, it's tough to judge these days of the Avengers because the recent point where they put together so many Avengers teams, they just got to keep putting more characters on them. They don't have enough teams. They don't have characters for teams.
So, Kelly, let me get your final thoughts on this. Superhero teams, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I don't really think they've changed that much over the years. I mean, it's formulaic, I guess, but I think what's really changed is, like, they've decided to go deeper into, like, how they interact with each other and their personal issues as opposed to just, like, let's have them team up and fight a bad guy and that's the end of it.
Right on. Like when Starro would come and try and take over the world one starfish at a time, or Brainiac, for that matter. Even the Skrulls or the Kree War would spill over onto Earth, and the Avengers would have to take care of it in 32 pages or less.
I don't think that's how Starro tried to take over the world. That sounds like a bad plan. One starfish at a time?
Right, right. Because he's intergalactic starfish with a big eye in the center.
I hope that's what he does next time.
Jason, final thoughts on superheroes.
It's still the same basic formula. It's just the ingredients are different, I guess. It's still let's put the, you know, the 5 to 7 to 9 most popular characters together and tell a giant story about them. But it's changed from the... Back then it was, they just have to be together to fight these major villains all the time. Well, now it's more interpersonal dynamics between the characters.
Right.
Not so much them having to fight, you know, Darkseid every time he decides to blast onto Earth.
Yeah. So with that, let's go into what we thought would be the ultimate team. Now there's really no restrictions to this, so long as they're comic book characters. But each one of us had to choose what we thought would be the ultimate team or our superhero team. You could pick up to 7 members. So, Kelly, what type of team did you choose? I know we talked about this a little bit before we started, but give us the list of your team and who would be your team leader.
My team is just a motley crew of random characters that I really like. I didn't really have a theme. So I was just like super excited that we were assembling a team, and I was like, oh gosh, let me just pick everyone I like and put them all on one team.
Okay, who do you have?
Okay, let me bring up my thing. Okay. I made a list. I have Captain America. And he's obviously going to be the leader.
Okay.
Any team he's on, he'll be the leader.
He kind of has to be.
Yeah. Some of mine aren't comic book characters. I apologize, but I really don't care. Sorry, I'm not sorry.
This is episode 25. Anything on this episode?
Then I picked Dean Winchester from Supernatural.
Okay.
No superpowers, but he's a badass.
Right on.
Then I picked Jason Todd. He's my favorite Robin.
Okay.
Impulse.
Okay.
Because someone has to have superpowers. The 11th Doctor. So I got time travel, so I basically beat everyone.
Good. Okay, right on.
And then I picked Styles from Teen Wolf.
Now, Styles from the movie or Styles from the TV show?
The TV show.
Okay.
Damn it.
He's such a great character. You don't even know.
The main thing I remember from the movie is Styles wearing that T-shirt that says, "What are you looking at, Dick Nose?"
He still wears really funny shirts on the TV show, so.
I don't know about all that. All right, so you compiled this team of characters that you like for no other reason than to put them on a team.
That was the whole point of the exercise.
Yeah, okay, so fair enough. Jason, let's go with you. What is your team?
All right, I used the whole max of 7. Cyclops, who's my team leader. I thought about Batman, but he's overused for things like this. Green Lantern, huh?
He's a good character, though. So you.
He is a good character, but, I mean, I kind of wanted to build a team that, you know, wouldn't have... I don't know, part of it was me wanting to put characters I like, and then part of it was me wanting to use some, you know, characters that you wouldn't normally think to put in it.
Okay, you're going for more the non-atypical team.
Right.
Okay.
Because, I mean, really, you could just put Batman, Superman, you know, together. Anyway, Cyclops, team leader. Green Lantern, just because he's my favorite character. Plus, he's a pretty heavy hitter. I got the 10th Doctor. So, suck it, Kelly.
Whatever.
He's the better doctor.
That's your opinion.
Yep, but it's right. I've got the Bart Allen Kid Flash, not the Impulse, the Kid Flash, because I wanted a speedster, and I also wanted him to fill the hole making jokes. He's the comedy relief.
He's your wisecracker.
Exactly. Magneto, and I was a little wary of putting another mutant on the team, but I wanted him there just to be another, you know, heavy hitter.
Right.
Martian Manhunter, so he can do the whole telepathy and mind link the team and keep them organized. And then I chose Jason Blood. I'm not sure if all of you know him. He's the guy who's his soul's bonded to Etrigan, the demon. But he also covers the mystic aspect.
I know.
Yeah, he covers the magic aspect for me. Plus, having him on the team lets him transform into Etrigan, so that I technically have 8 members.
Right on. The extra, the reserve member.
Yeah.
The the hidden surprise. Tom, what would your team be?
Okay, well, see, I actually tried something different here because I put this list together a while ago, and I wanted to try it out there because I never had a chance to try it out on anybody. And I was always wondering what would I put together if I were writing the Justice League, right?
Okay.
So how would I define the team? And I picked guys, and a lot of these people are standard, and you'll think, oh, that's not creative. But I picked them for very particular reasons. And there's more than seven, but too bad.
Is there 25?
No, actually, I've got 9, I think.
I love how we establish parameters, and we're like, okay, we'll do it. And then when we get to that point, we're like, screw the parameters.
Rules are for, you know, squares.
Yeah. Okay, so clearly, look, you start with Superman because you need someone who's sort of the epitome of what a hero is. If you're going to put him on the Justice League, which is the international face of superheroes, pretty much.
Right on.
Green Lantern, because you need the cosmic policeman.
Do you agree with me in
thinking
that Green Lantern has a severe lack of imagination? Like, Jon Stewart has more imagination than Hal Jordan does?
Well, yeah, that's always been written.
I think it depends on who's writing them.
So, which do you have a specific Green Lantern for your team, or is it...
Yes, whichever one is the active Green Lantern of the sector.
Fair enough.
Which is all of them.
Listen, no, right now it's Hal Jordan.
No, technically, right now it's Jon Stewart.
Oh,
then it would be Jon Stewart.
Yeah, they kicked Hal Jordan out.
Didn't he get
okay?
Yeah, all right.
In which case, I would, if I were head of the Justice League, I would then tell Hal Jordan, listen, friend, you got kicked out of the Lantern. Yeah, we don't want you anymore. We're going to get the other guy. It's more about we've got to put together this big international team, so who is going to be the best, who's going to help keep us alive the best. And then you put Batman in there for Black Ops and Subterfuge. Wonder Woman is the field general. Superman's the face, but Wonder Woman is in charge in combat.
Right on. That makes a lot of sense considering her background.
Martian Manhunter is the diplomat. I put the Flash on because he's a cop.
Okay.
Green Arrow as the social conscience.
I think he is an underused character.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Terrific to be the tech science guy.
Okay.
And then Zatanna for magic.
Right on. All right. With my team, I decided to go a little different. I chose an urban assault team. Like my team would be the team that you would call in to do things that your team couldn't do or didn't want to get acknowledged for doing. So I chose Batman, who would be my team leader. Then I would have Wolverine, who would be my second in command, followed by Ninjak. If none of you know who he is the awesome, ultra-cool espionage ninja from the Valiant universe. Go check it out. I did a review of his first issue. Then I would have Shadowhawk, who I personally think is a good character idea, but was written very terribly. And then finally for my telepath, I would have Psylocke.
Telepath, that's your second ninja.
Yeah, they're all kind of ninja trained, like with the exception of Shadowhawk. Shadowhawk has police training, and that's it. But then the rest of them are all ninjas. So.
Is that character name really Ninjak?
Yes. Yes.
That's heinous.
But see, your guys wouldn't say that because then he would espionage, kill your character, and it'd be over.
You know what?
Still a bad name.
Ninjak sounds better than Ninjam.
That's true.
What? yeah, that's right. It does sound better than Ninjam.
Well, I mean, if you just have to throw one extra letter at the end of ninja, Ninjak sounds better than Ninjam or Ninjaz.
How much cold medication are you on?
Ninja.
What about Ninjas?
Is that Ninjak with a Q?
Ninjaz. With a Z.
It's like Shaq.
Yeah.
Ninjak Nin, with a K.
Ninshaq.
I like it with a Z. With a Z.
Like
Ninjaz.
Ninjay.
Try and pronounce it with a J on the end of it. See what happens.
What?
Ninjaj. Ninjaj.
Wow. All right.
Doing the most.
We have officially hit the end of this show.
I think we've officially hit the bottom of the barrel.
Yes. okay. Guys, don't forget to check out some of the monthly articles that we have. Game Reviews by Scott Shea. He has Earthbound out right now. Talks about that Super Nintendo game that I never played. I'm not big on RPGs. But he is, and he talks a lot about that, so that needs to be checked out. Also, Tommy Lutz has the new Comics for Noobs. That's out right now. A new one should be coming out soon. Crowdfunding Flash by Chip Reese. Those need to be checked out. If you see something that's really cool, that's a great idea, go ahead and support it, because those guys need help as much as the big people do. And a lot of the things from Crowdfunding Flash that I've seen so far have been really, really awesome ideas that need your support. Also, don't forget that Matt, our producer, not only does he produce and help write the show from time to time, but he has a podcast of his own. It's called Ape for Comics Podcast. You need to check that out. It's all comic books, nothing deviated from that, just straight comic book talk. Something to take a look at. Also, don't forget to hit up Zazzle.com/StashMyComics. That is our merchandise store. You can get T-shirts, hats, bumper stickers, you name it. It's there for you. You know you want it. Geek culture is not complete unless you have StashMyComics.com merchandise. So take care of that. Also, we're going to have some new articles coming out from Stash My Toys, Crossover Classics, The Dollar Box, and a whole lot . So this is the end of 25. I'm sad to see it go. Matt, it's a shame that you weren't here to enjoy the awesomeness that was this. But the movie that shall not be named, that I'm not naming, we're not talking about.
You keep talking about it.
But I'm not.
Stop bringing it up.
Why are you bringing it up?
It's like saying he who must not be named. You're still talking about him.
The three of us didn't mention once this episode.
That goes without saying.
Yeah, what?
But you keep saying it.
Stop resurrecting this joke.
It's like the phoenix. Comes out of the ant.
Find some other terrible movie to obsess over.
Did he just make a bird noise? Did he just make a bird noise?
Caw, caw. All
right, just end the show. Please end the show. Oh, good Lord.
We are doing this.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of here.
We could be the SMC Task Force.
No more Maximum Overdrive, I promise.
He's bringing it up.
He's brought it up.
It was already dead. He kept bringing it back to life.
Beating a dead horse.
Yeah.
And we're past that. Tim's like beating the bones of the dead horse.
Tim is like beating the grave.
Yeah, just
you're beating the glue bottle.
1, 2, 3. StashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it.